So there's actually two different sections that I wanted to talk about in here. So I think one, I'm just going to really briefly just say it. And that is, when if you look at earlier in the part two, somewhere right around where you started, page five or whatever that was. But it's talking about this whole elaborate system of offerings. You're making butter lamps, you're doing banners, you're doing this, you're doing that, you're doing all of these things. That is Shakyamuni Buddha talking. When we come to practice Buddhism, oftentimes there's two different classes or two different categories of practitioners. The practitioner that comes very early on in their the new practitioner is anti-ritual because they perceive ritual to be religious. So they try to do as minimum as possible, and when they do it as minimum as possible, they do it as cheaply as possible. That is not in accordance with the way. That's not what Shakyamuni says here. If you look, this is very elaborate. I mean, you're setting up lamps that have to be bright enough to radiate at least 3 to 4 feet of light. This candle. And you need 7 of those. And you have to tend them so well that they don't burn out for the entire time that this is, the entire duration of this practice. 49 days. That's not cheap. And it's not cheap on your effort and energy. Putting out the incense, the flowers. I mean, flowers aren't cheap. Most of us, we're interested in offering flowers if we can randomly pick them in somebody's yard. Very few of us will go out to the forest and say, hey, I need, 5 pounds of rose petals because I have a puja to do. But Shakyamuni requires it. He requires enough petals of flowers that you're taking handfuls of them for each of the images that he tells you to set up, and daily throwing those flowers on those images. That's a lot of flowers. A lot. It is incorrect to think that all of this outer ritual stuff is the religion. It is not. It is the first practice of all of the 6 paramitas, the 6 perfections. It is the Buddha's way to get you to engage in generosity. Generosity of your pocketbook, which no one wants to talk about in religion. But get over it. The second is the generosity of your own energies and effort. Laziness is considered one of the very, very wicked, toxic poisons in Buddhism. Anybody who wants to see just how nasty it is, go right into numerical discourses. The section of ones, very first part of the book, Buddha lists all these things that are absolutely horrid and what they do. And he says, laziness and torpor and all of these things destroy all your merit. They destroy all your future attainment. And additionally, they cause a complete and total demise of the Dharma in your life. So for us to do something and engage and overcome the sickness of worshiping our idol ego, he gives outer practice. For you to learn control of your mind, exert your will over your impulses. Exert your personal power over your emotionalism. And switch the role of master and servant so that you master the body. This is the inner meaning of doing the generosity. The secret meaning is, if you don't have any generosity, you won't have any other perfection. Thus, you will have no attainment in this lifetime. There's the big secret. You don't want to do it because you're lazy? Or you think you know better?
Yeah.
Then you shall attain nothing. Because if you do know better, then why are you here? You are in the wrong location. You don't need this Dharma talk, so exit now. And for those of you that think you know better, this is your opportunity to learn the truth. And that is, you don't. If you did, you would have no suffering. You would have bliss openness. You would be in a state of nirvana. And you would be very close to attaining your Anuttara Samyak Sambodhi and have no problems doing outer practices. So there is your proof of your problem. The second category is the practitioner who's been around long enough that they somehow think that they no longer need to. Also, grave mistake. Also, grave mistake. Along this same line of whether we think we know better, overcoming ourselves, and that's the small s. Look at this list. It's almost on the last page. Or maybe the last page. It's right before he gives the list of the 12 powerful Yaksha generals. If you go up to the paragraph just above that, Buddha says, "Moreover, Ananda," which, by the way, if you want to know a little insight to these different bodhisattvas and disciples of Buddha, Numerical Discourse is great because they have a section also in the ones where he gives out Oscars. He sits there and he'll say, "Best actor for wisdom goes to Ananda." And Ananda like wins 10 Oscars in a row. It's just ridiculous. Sariputra gets one or two, you know. There's a couple guys that get one. But Ananda like sweeps the Oscars. He's the champion of them. He's a really great guy. Also goes through the whole list of all the nuns and all of the female bodhisattvas. He gives them their Oscars as well. It's a very interesting list. Anyhow, look, he says, "Moreover, Ananda, the king of all the Yamas." If you want to know what he looks like, if you look up the mandala or the Dharma chakra of the wheel of life, and you look on the outer wheel, you'll see a guy holding onto the top and biting the top of the wheel. That's him. That's the guy. This king of all the demons, right? Yama is this big demon. The king of all of them is responsible for keeping a karmic register of everyone in the world. This is Buddha's way of describing or alluding to us how important it is to be aware of our karmic activity and what we're generating. Now look. He gives this list. If you don't respect your parents, okay, so there's big one, number one. Be careful with the concept of respect, because we can often misunderstand it and put ourselves in horrible, abusive situations. That's not what that means.
Yeah.
Does not mean that you put yourself in an abusive situation.
Yeah.
Says the one commits the five heinous crimes. It's another one to get, a very good one to look up. If you damage or slander the three jewels, that means you've come and you've practiced for a while, you've taken the refuge, and then for whatever reason, you do decide to break your ties with the lineage. No longer have the blessings of all of the Buddhas, Bodhisattvas, and teachers, with that unbroken chain of lineage in the Sangha, and you go off on your own and start talking negative about Buddhism and about the teachings and the Sangha and the teachers. That's what this is. It's not good. Now look at this next one. This is the one that I really like here. It says, or those who break the laws of the land. I don't know if this phrase is still hip or not, but how about an oh snap from someone? Can we get one of those? No one? How about a big fist bump? Because how many of us like to use our religious tendencies, our religious beliefs, to disobey local law? Or we like, especially those of us in the West, we like to grab on to this delusional idea that we have these inalienable rights. And if anything infringes on those, including the law, we don't have to tolerate it. That's not what he said. Look, this is in the list along with five heinous crimes. You want to know what those are? It's like killing your parents, murdering a Dharma teacher, injuring a Buddha, causing a community to have so much turmoil that it splits the community in half and the congregation falls apart. This is really, really high criminal stuff. And in this list, he says, also disobeying the laws of the land. Didn't that sign just say 55 miles an hour is the maximum speed limit allowed? Correct me if I'm wrong, but did that sign not say that? What are we doing? Another really hot topic right now that's out there. It's always out there. It comes up a half a dozen times a year for me as a Dharma teacher. What about smoking pot? What about it? What does that line say? Somebody read that line out loud. Not you. Somebody other than an acharya. Come on! No one wants to read the Dharma.
Yeah.
If there are sentient beings who do not respect their parents, commit one of the five heinous crimes, damage or slander the three jewels, break the laws of the land.
Right there. You want to know about smoking pot from not even this spiritual purpose of why I never allow a student to do that. But here's from a general Dharma perspective. The sutra says, do not break the laws of the land. So now, what does the law of your state say? So you live in California, and the state law says it's fine. Great. What does the federal law say? Anyone know? Huh? Illegal. It's illegal.
What about unjust laws? Of laws of the land?
It's illegal. You want to know if you can do it as somebody who's taking the refuge? Those of you that haven't, listen very carefully. You take refuge, you can't. In the United States. You want to go to Amsterdam. Go someplace that doesn't care. Go find a native to take you on their reservation and find out if their laws will let you or not, because that's sovereign land. But in this place, no. Absolutely not. These are not suggestions. I want you to be very, very clear about this. When the Buddha gives a teaching like this, he does not say maybe. He does not say it's a good idea to refrain from. He says, do not. What does that mean to you as a practitioner? Your ego versus the Buddha. Yeah. What master do you want to serve? Because there's only one out of those two that's leading you to total, complete enlightenment. And if not that, at least only one of them is leading you to the bliss openness that liberates you from your suffering. I guarantee it's not your ego. I swear on my own attainments, it is not your ego. Now, he goes on to talk about this guy. He meters out all the punishment. That's the karmic retribution that you create by doing these kinds of things. But there's something else that's not in this sutra, but you'll find it also in Numerical Discourse. If you go look up that text, look up just that first section, because he gives, like I said, that list of everything you do that's negative, that's against my teachings, these are the results. But listen to this. Towards the end of that section, Buddha gets very, very clear, and he says, listen to me. When I give you a commandment and you willfully ignore it, all intimate connection of me knowing you is severed. You're not mine. And that's from your end. It is you who gets up and leaves the table, not the Buddha. And those of you at the Blue Lotus, if you turn around and look behind you, there's this little shrine in the back corner called Dharma Protector Shrine. These guys protect all the practitioners while they're on the path. But here's what's really great about them. When you willfully ignore Shakyamuni Buddha's teachings, or that found in the Dharma, or that given to you by the Sangha, because those are the three jewels that you took refuge in, those Dharma protectors are sworn under oath to the Buddha himself to keep you away from Dharma. In order that your sickness of egotism does not somehow dilute, confuse, or corrupt those teachings. Because that's what you'll do. And I do not think I need to say the proof of that is everywhere. Look at all of the religious problems that we have in society right now. The total collapse of the morals, of all of the codes of conduct, of all kinds of things. And that is due to an egomaniac. That's the only purpose. There's no other reason for the failure of any religion other than somebody's an egomaniac and listens to that and refuses to follow the wisdom that's going to liberate them. And they justify it through their own delusion, and then it corrupts the teachings. Because that's how they have to justify it. They got to corrupt the teachings to make it work. And then it corrupts those who are also following. And next thing you know, you have a total, complete collapse. And at the end of this little section, Shakyamuni Buddha then says, once again, back to outer practices. He does not let that slip from their minds. Back to outer practice. Now somebody asks, what about unjust laws? Those that would cause you to violate your vows. There's two teachings on that. One, it's your karma to suffer the consequences of that. Meaning, I'm a conscientious objector. I'm not going to go to war. So you go to prison. But when you do something like this, and you stand up against an actual unjust law that would cause you to violate one of your vows, that's what it has to be. It can't be, oh, well, there needs to be equality for this guy with five arms because for some reason nobody puts five freaking door handles on a door, and so now we're going to protest that they get that. That's not reasonable.
Yeah, that's one.
That's one. What is reasonable is when they tell you, you need to kill. And you say, sorry, I take a vow, I'm not allowed to. And they say, well, you have to. Now you have a reason to say, well, I can't.
I can.
But your protest must be just like that. I'm sorry, I respectfully decline. And they say, then you go to jail. And you say, okay, well, that's all right. What time do you want me to show up? That's it.
You're going to pick up a...
So be very careful when you are dealing with laws of land. But I wanted to point out very, very clearly, Shakyamuni Buddha is not wishy-washy. You may think Buddhism, oh yeah, you know, it's free, hippie, love, and peaceful. Don't confuse yourself. This path is a very narrow path. And it is systematically laid out in such a way that you must follow each part of it in order to accomplish it. It's not a path for your ego to walk along and for your ego to be enlightened. It is a path to the butcher block that trims off any remainder of ego. It was never meant to be not painful. It's your clinging that makes it painful. And there's no apology for that. approach your outer practices in a very, very professional and a very devoted manner. Do not be lackadaisical. Do not be cheap. Because I'm going to close with this statement. When the Buddha gives a directive like these, your life actually depends on it. Your life depends on the following of these teachings. Because if you don't, you get to come back and do this again. And hopefully, you don't slide back in having to come back. Because it's not uncommon for the Buddha to say, just because you get Dharma right now in this precious human body, does not guarantee you to have it again for another 100 lifetimes. Your life depends on it. This should inspire you to have devotion. It's not legalistic. You're the one drowning in the ocean, screaming for someone to save you. He throws you a life ring and tells you how to use the life ring. Put it over your head, under your arms. If you tell him, screw you, I'm not doing it, he can't help you. Understand?